Chapter 6. June. At 7:30 every morning and 8:30 every night, on the dot, my mom calls. Like clockwork. She wants to ensure that her good little girl remains exactly that, which means I have to be tucked away in my room, safe and sound, a half hour before curfew. To confirm that I'm actually in the dormitory and not just pretending to be, she doesn't call my cell phone, but rather the payphone in the girls' hallway, a relic from the old days. What she doesn't realize is that I am always here, in the studios, the dorm, a classroom, or the student lounge. I do nothing but study and dance. I am her good little girl. I watch the hall and wait to see if Gigi's back. That nut got up at 6 a.m. to go to Central Park to feed the ducks. Last time, she brought me a flower for my desk, which is kind of nice or whatever. She's really into nature, but she should be stretching or seeing how Bette's looking this morning, since she slept through all of last night's theatrics. She's the sugar plum fairy, after all, and that means she is probably Bette's next victim. Or everyone's victim, for that matter. We don't handle change to our hierarchy very well. I'm still shocked by Mr. K's decision. And I'm still on the fence about Gigi. Some days I like her. Some days I don't. It's been so long since I've had a friend. I don't know what to do. How to behave. This morning, I'm worn out from staying up late to watch Bette's mom cut her down to size. I didn't relish it the way the other girls did, but I like to know what I'm up against. I like to know everything about everyone because it all matters at the school. What you eat, what you wear, where you came from, how much you weigh, your ballet training, who your friends are, how much money you have, if you have good feet, if you've won any competitions, what kind of connections you have, if your parents have season ballet tickets, if your mother or father was a dancer, if you know the history of ballet. And I plan to know it all. About every single dancer here. That's the only way to be on top. I thumb the payphone's receiver at 7:26 a.m., my stomach griping as I wait for it to ring. I feel like I ate too much for breakfast. My mom is always exactly on time, so, knowing I have exactly 4 minutes, I run into the hallway bathroom. I throw up a mix of water, tea, and grapefruit. 2 fingers bring it out smooth and soundless. The 3rd grade was the first time I ever did it. I caught my mom vomiting after a dinner party at the neighbor's house. She'd swept me from the bathroom, her face clammy and hands shaky, telling me that American food can poison you, and you must always get rid of it. I asked her why she'd eaten it in the first place, and she said that one has to eat to be polite. Never be a bad guest or you won't be invited again, and that would be shameful. Now I get rid of most things I eat, even Korean food. I bury those thoughts, though. It's all for ballet, for my love of the dance. My head feels clearer now. My stomach is calm. Back in place, I glare at the phone, hoping to catch it on the first ring. I check my watch. 1 minute until half past. Restless, I run through basic positions. First, second, plié, tendu, and pas de bourrée. When she finally calls. 7:30, on the dot. I grab it before the second full ring. She doesn't waste time with greetings, doesn't waste time confirming that she's actually talking to me and not one of the other girls on the hall. Her voice fills my ear.
I got an email from Mr. Stanitowski. You have a D in math, a D, a 62%. I don't understand what the problem is. You have it so easy. Kids in Korea are at school after school. They work hard. You dance all day, and still you get poor grade.
I try to respond, but her tirade continues.
You know, Ijeon, colleges look at everything. You will not get into good school. You will not be successful.
She'll never call me June. Always my Korean name. She buzzes on and I move the phone a little away from my ear. Even now, after I've been at the conservatory for nearly a decade, it still doesn't occur to her that this is my dream, that this is my reality, that I will be a dancer, that I won't go to college. To her, it's some silly, short-lived phase that I'll eventually grow out of. It's a resume builder, perhaps, something to put on my college applications, but nothing more. I attempt not to listen or to care and to discount her mispronounced words, but each one finds its way into my ear. My cheeks are hot and sweat clumps up my foundation. I work desperately to look perfect, to have that doll-like ballerina face, delicate and soft. The feel of the makeup on my skin and the scent of the powder remind me I've transformed into a ballerina, something better than being just a regular girl. If I add another layer of powder, I feel like I can erase the stress altogether. My mom yells and I dig through my dance bag, half listening, half worrying, half obsessing, hoping my missing compact is floating around in the mess of shoes and bandages and leg warmers jumbled inside. I order my little compact special, and I'm useless without them. My newest one has been missing since yesterday. I had to use an old one earlier, and there'd barely been any makeup left in it.
"It's time to give up dancing, Ijeon," my mom says.
"No," I say. It just slips out.
"What did you say?"
There's silence. Korean kids aren't supposed to talk back to their parents. Only white kids do that, and being half white still doesn't afford me that privilege. I hear her breathing accelerate, whether she's willing to admit it or not, and usually she's not. Dancing is in my blood. I may not have the white blonde hair or crystal blue eyes, but I belong here just as much as Bet or Eleanor or even Alec.
"You danced?"
I whisper, slightly afraid she might reach to the phone and slap me. She clears her throat, and I know she's smoothing the front of her iron skirt and trying to remain composed. Sometimes I wish she'd tell me what it was like when she danced here, or share those tips only veteran ballerinas know. I wish she'd put on one of those old leotards she hides under her bed and dance with me in a studio. I listen to her breathe for 3 more beats. She finally speaks.
"What did you have put dinner last night? Stay away from that patty American food. I'll drop up japchae and pechuguk."
And there she goes, burying her secret, the thing my mother will deny until the day she dies.
"Maybe Heiji can tutor you in math again. I was speaking to her mother. Mrs. Yi says that Seijin and the other girls always ask you to their parties, but you never go. Seijin and Heiji are nice, pretty girls."
Seijin is not a nice girl. Deep down, neither am I. Our moms think we're sweet and obedient kids, behaving just how we would if we'd been born and raised in Korea. Seijin and I used to be roommates and best friends. My heart squeezes a little, even though I don't want it to. I glance at Seijin's room door, our old room door, and remember how close we used to be. I haven't had a real friend since her. I tell my mom a lie. "I went to one tea that Seijin had, and they all spoke Korean the whole time, and really fast. I couldn't keep up."
"That's your own fault,"
she interrupts, not taking any of the blame for the way she raised me. I know little Korean phrases, all the foods, and just enough to eavesdrop during her Korean social events, but not enough for a full conversation, which is depressing when I think too long about it.
"I raise your allowance. You take a language class. We'll help on college applications. Oh, also, you sign up for the SAT? The academic counselor says one is in late October, and I have rehearsals for 3 hours every night for the next 2 months,"
I say, quietly seething.
"I told you, I'm the understudy for the Sugar Plum Fairy."
"Understudy,"
she says with disdain, I want to give her the understudy speech Morky gives after every casting. That I could be thrown in last minute. That I was picked because I'm a fast learner. That I can handle the pressure of dancing the role for the first time live. That it's an enormous responsibility.
Ijan, that's all you ever be. They'll never cast an Asian in the lead. You accept that. The Russians never did, even when I was there.
She pauses, tucking those secrets back in.
Better start working on getting into good college now.
They cast a black girl as the Sugar Plum Fairy. My roommate, Gigi. I say, not really sure if that made things worse or better. Point is, I didn't get the role. Silence follows again. She says the word understudy again. I can hear her disappointment turn to anger.
I'm serious now, Ijan, she says. No more nonsense. Time to focus. This will be your last year if you can't be any better than understudy. No more dancing. You'll be going to public school in our neighborhood.
Then she simply hangs up, not even waiting for me to argue or to say goodbye. Listening to her talk about dance, you'd never know she'd walk through these very halls, lived in one of these tiny dorm rooms, danced in the studios, was part of the company. But something happened. Something bad. And she never told me why she'd stopped. She's since become a successful businesswoman, importing high-quality dancewear from Korea, and she wants me to follow in her footsteps and eventually take over. That is the Korean way. What little of it that I know. She raised me all alone. Her parents disowned her for staying here and having me. I'm all she's got. So part of me knows I should obey her. Be a good daughter. Go home on weekends and shop with her at the Korean markets on Saturdays, attend church with her on Sundays, and return to the time when I used to curl up in her bed like a little spoon in front of her. But the thought of going to a public school unnerves me, making me want to throw up again. Now, the bathroom is full of girls getting ready for ballet class, and my stomach is basically empty. So I head to the light instead. It's a little storage closet at the end of the 11th floor girls' hall that's become a confessional booth of sorts. No one knows who started it, but it's been here forever. Wallpapered with a collage of pictures, kind of like a living, breathing picture feed. From famous ballerinas to gorgeous costumes to the perfect arched foot to anonymously posted inspirational quotes and messages. Even things from the 80s. There's a tiny TV and DVD player, and a cabinet filled with discs of the greatest ballets ever performed, if one needs some inspiration. And I could definitely use some. I slip inside, still reeling from the conversation with my mom. If I can just have one chance, I know I can do this. I am a prima ballerina. I just have to make them see. I have to make my mom see. I can't leave the conservatory. I won't. The Sugar Plum Fairy is my shot. Maybe my only one. The understudy is just one little step away from the lead. I've got to make it happen. No matter what. I fight off my thoughts about Gigi, how we sometimes stay up late watching old sitcoms and online videos of classic ballets, how she's always leaving me little notes and flowers. This is too important. This is my career. I rifle through my duffel bag for my compact, and my old jewelry box distracts me. A gift from a father I've never met. It fits perfectly in my palm. I carry it with me everywhere I go, a promise that I will someday find him. I run my fingers along the back, winding the tiny key and opening the lid to watch the little ballerina twirl. Muyonga, dancer. The sweet melody reminds me of all the things I love about ballet. The control, the beauty, the music. In ballet, I can work on things over and over and over again until I achieve them, training my muscles until my body submits to what I want. It doesn't matter who my family is, or if I have friends, or if guys like me. Only what my body can do. A copy of the cast list is up on the wall, alongside ones from previous years. I see Gigi's name above mine. I stare until the typed letters blur, until I can see my name above hers. I can't be invisible anymore, no matter how nice Gigi might be to me. The staring contest with the wall helps me calm down, the conversation I just had with my mom drifting away. I won't give up. I'll push someone out of the way to get it. I pick up a marker from the floor. My hand shakes. Guilt creeps into me, but on the wall, in bold black ink, I write, Gigi should watch her back.
Chapter 7. Gigi. A week and a half after the cast list went up, we've settled into our rehearsal schedule. We pile into the second floor, Studio E, where I won't be able to see the rest of the sunset. I've been trying to follow Mama's advice and watch it every day in order to stay positive. Don't carry worries around, she always says. They're heavy. It's hard to hold on to her words here. Nerves erase them easily. But I have to, and it helps that I haven't felt sick since the list was posted, so they have nothing to worry about. Eleanor walks into the studio beside me, and I make a joke about our ballet madam's new haircut, just to get her to talk to me. It's hard to have real connections, or even conversations with the girls here. She laughs, and so do I. The room is a mess of leg warmers, point shoes, and chatter as we stretch our bodies so they'll fold like putty. June rests her head against the wall, her legs two arrows shot in opposite directions. She always warms up, even though she doesn't get to dance in the center with the rest of us. She only sits and marks variation movements and timing in the understudy book off to the side. I imagine that we'd rehearse together, laughing, teaching each other other little things, moving in sync, like we used to do back home. But she won't, no matter how many times I ask her if she wants to. Bet finishes tying on a translucent dance skirt, as if she has all the time in the world, and she's watching me from her peripheral vision. Like I've angered her even more by coming to rehearsal with Eleanor. Like I've broken some rule. There has never been a knife sharper than those blue eyes of hers. And where her eyes go, everyone else's follow. It takes only a few moments until the eyes of the whole cast are on me. Enjoying my audience, I make a fart sound with my mouth. Some of them laugh, some of them frown, and Bet rolls her eyes. I plop down next to June and smile, and she gives the worst imitation of one in return. I've learned it's just her, not to take it personally. I peel off my warm-ups, cut off sweatpants that used to be Mama's, and one of my old t-shirts cropped at the top and bottom. I sew new ribbons onto my point shoes. My fingers fumbling with the needle and dental floss and slippery satin. I try to shake out the nerves in my hands. Today I have to mark my solo for timing and progress in front of everyone. I've only had a week and a half of character instruction with Morky and Pavlovich, and I should have broken these shoes in yesterday so they'd be perfect. I pull the dental floss through the shoe and it snaps. Get it together, I tell myself, re-sewing. I stand and push my heel on the front of each shoe, feeling the glued fibers in the toe box break underneath my weight. With quick fingers, I work with the inside of the shoe, peeling back the fabric to expose the leather shank, like it's a banana, and use my pliers to pull out the tiny nail. I remember crying when I had to break in my first pair of point shoes. I thought it would make them ugly, instead of able to support all the new movements I would make. I cut away part of the shank under my heel, right where the curve in my arches begins. I secure it with quick dry glue and tape, then test my weight. I pad my toes with a swath of lamb's wool, slip the shoes on, and tie the ribbons in a square knot. Eleanor warms up next to me, and her shoes make a weird crunchy noise. We look at each other and burst into laughter. A bag clobbers my head. Ow! I glance up. Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't see you there. Bet says, standing above me, no longer hovering in the background. Bet plops down in the small space between Eleanor and me and pulls aside a bit of the fabric covering the mirror. All of them are draped with curtains because Mr. K insists that reflections distance dancers from becoming their characters, that they make dancers lazy. Bet stares at herself, her lips, when they are pursed together and painted with that hot pink lipstick, are an impossible heart shape. With a mouthful of clips and pins, Bet slicks her blonde hair into the perfect bun. Each strand obeys her touch, unlike my own hair. She adds hairspray to seal it in place. I feel my curls fighting against the bun, transforming into a frizzy nest. I should have gone to all the trouble to straighten it, or ask Aunt Leah to take me to the hair salon. I search the mirror for Bet's gaze. Casually, artfully, she applies fake eyelashes, dark and feathery, like the wings of my butterflies in their terrarium upstairs. I touch my cheek. My face is naked, no makeup, no lipstick, no eyeshadow. Since the first day of school, June's warned me that I should make up my face. That is part of being a serious ballerina. That the teachers favor it. But I can't. I don't like the feel of it on my face. Clumpy and goopy. The lipstick Bet wears would make me feel like a clown. I only wear it for performances. And even then, I can't wait to wash it off in the green room afterward. She must notice my fingers tiptoeing over my bare cheek, because she stops her expert application to look at me. I love how you don't do anything with your face, she says, but I can't tell if the word love might actually mean hate. I'm not fluent in the language these ballerinas speak to one another. The girls at my old dance studio were never like this. Don't you just love it, Eleanor? Eleanor says. Oh, yeah. Mama's always saying she thinks makeup is dishonest, so. Of course, as soon as the words leave my mouth, I want to catch them and press them back in. I mean, not that she's right. I just never really got into it. I give her the biggest, most sincere smile I can muster. You always look beautiful, though, I add. Seriously, I feel like an idiot. I really admire your confidence in everything, Bet says. So smooth she erases how awkward I was. But you really should put on a little something. Playing the part and looking the part are sometimes the same thing, don't you think? I don't really agree, but she was so graceful in forgiving my faux pas that I nod a little. She hands me a compact and a blush brush. Just try a little. You'll love it, she says, matching the largeness of my earlier smile. And boys like it. I sweep on a tiny bit of the powder, and maybe she's right. The blush complements my skin tone. I have an extra glow. I'm just about to keep the conversation going and bask a little more in the attention Bet's suddenly lavishing on me. But before I can say anything, she's on her feet and hooking her foot on the bar. The moment is over. Liz tramples over. She whispers something in Bet's ear and looks down at me, crinkling her thin white nose like she's smelling garbage left out on the curb. The boys shuffle in, Alec in the lead and Henri last, as always. Alec winks at me, then swoops in and gives Bet a hug. I feel an unexpected twist of jealousy. You coming over tonight? She purrs in his ear, just loud enough for us all to hear. Let's see how tired we are after rehearsal, Alec says. I could swear he shifts his eye for a half second over her shoulder and looks right at me, smiles even. But it's too quick to tell. You promised, Bet says. It's not a whine, which would be below her. It's a statement, a fact. And she crosses her arms over her chest, straightens her back, taking the stance of a lawyer questioning a witness. Can you continue your soap opera later, please? Will says, interrupting the long look between the two of them. I'm sure you'll get your way. Bet bristles, even though it's a compliment, I think. A confirmation of Bet's beauty, her seductive powers, and most of all, how much Alec must love her. Alec gives her a kiss on the cheek, and my heart twists a little more when Bet takes his face and moves it so his mouth reaches hers. The whole room looks away from them, as if on cue, as if they've been doing this their whole lives, which I guess they probably have. But I haven't, so I don't know the rule about giving Bet and Alec their little private moment and my eyes alone stay on them. So it is only me who sees Alec slide Bet off his mouth. Her whole forehead creases, and he tries to kiss her cheek again, but she turns her face away from him and takes a step back, so full of hurt, I can practically smell it. She catches me looking straight at them, as ill-advised as staring straight at the sun. Bet makes an audible animal noise, but covers her mouth before it's all the way out. Whatever niceties we just exchanged while making ourselves up in the mirror have disappeared. I was not supposed to see what I just saw. I look away what feels like hours too late. I lift on point in a series of releves, bounce on the balls of my feet to loosen the shank further, and make sure my toes feel comfortable in the toe box. Mr. K storms into the room with the other dance teachers on his heels. They take seats along the front of the studio. We all scramble forward. Mr. K claps his hands and nods.
We will mark the last part of the Nutcracker this evening. I want to see the progress. Snow Queen, you're up first. Snowflakes gather around her, and others dart in and out of the center with wind-blown flurries. We'll just do the first 2 minutes, since your pas with Henri hasn't been practiced yet. I want to see your entrance bit. Henri, stand off to the side as if you're getting ready to join her.
This is Bet's first run through, and when she moves, she is a snowflake skittering across the floor, the very definition of grace. Her turns are effortless, her flourishes melodic, her hands and feet and face perfect. The other girls twirl around her, trying to keep up, but they are mere beginners in her presence. She holds her arms and hands in just the right way, the way our teacher Morky holds hers. Her face is soft, and she knows just the right way to turn it. A moth looking for the light. Everyone watches her in awe. A twist of pain stabs at me. Does everyone feel like Mr. K's made the wrong decision? Do they think Bet should be the sugar plum fairy? I fight away those feelings. Mr. K yells above the music, "More charisma! You are the snow lighter, lighter!" Bet's cheeks turn red. Morky says something in Russian, and Bet adjusts her leg. She does one pirouette, and the music ends. We all clap. Bet curtsies and exits stage left. She puts her hands on her head, and I notice that they're shaking. Mr. K turns to Morky.
The turns are sloppy. The not spotting properly.
Morky answers in Russian. Mr. K throws his hands up.
The basic should be sharp. So ingrain the automatic. Second nature. They look like amateurs in here.
Mr. K motions for Bat to return to center stage. She stands before him.
Your full combination was pretty. Your piquet turns, pirouettes all fine. Nice extension and perfect body alignment.
He strokes his goatee.
The difference between the kind of performance that gets you in the core and the one that lands you Aurora, Guitry, and Odette is character, feeling, and transformation butterfly. I need to forget who you are, Beth Abney, and see only the Snow Queen before me.
He dismisses her, and she curtsies and hurries from the center. She leans into the bar with her back to everyone. Mr. K plops down where Bet left, on the actual floor, to make sure the male dancers fly over him for their leaps and jumps. All the boys look nervous, except Henri. He does so well that even Alec hovers a little too close, watching how high Henri soars. I've seen his high jumps photographed in dance mags, which called him and Cassie an up-and-coming dance duo. Finally, Mr. K extends his arm to me. My turn. I gulp and shuffle to the front, ready to dance. Victor starts my music. I present my arms in little flutters, then wait for the third beat. Inhale and step into my first pique. Mr. K waves his hands in the air before I can start. He paces about the room with his hand on his mouth.
Sorry to interrupt. Maya Karenchneve. One thought before we proceed tonight.
He scratches his head. My stomach sinks. I fidget in my point shoes and wipe sweat from the back of my neck. I pretend to push some of my bobby pins farther into my bun, but it's an empty gesture. Not a curl is out of place. Mr. K and Morky fuss back and forth in Russian. He puts his hands up and she stops talking. Can we use the mirror, maybe? Will says, like he's translated their squabbles. Just for today? I know it's a safety blanket, but maybe it would help. I know it would help me. My chest collapses in relief at Will's suggestion. I've never practiced this early on without a mirror. He gives me a wink when I glance at him gratefully. I mouth the words, thank you.
Fine, fine, boys. Push back all the curtains.
Mr. K shakes his head and frowns at us, disappointed. He tells them all to split up. The boys scramble about to different areas of the room and pull back the black drapes. My music starts again. I concentrate on my footwork and the variation. I start to dance, tiptoeing across the floor. It flows, my mind letting go and my body taking over. My feet find every chime and melody. I feel ready to smile, to stop thinking about the steps and let the music guide me. But I hear whispers rise above my music. They grow louder and louder until I'm pulled out of the dance. My focus shattered. Do you see that? Look! It's written back there. Kind of random, right? Creepy. It's about Gigi. Victor's hands bang the piano keys in frustration, and he stops playing. Voices explode through the studio. I wobble from the sudden drop in energy. I put my arms out to catch my balance. I don't have to worry that someone's seen the awkward move. They're all looking at the mirrors, every last one of them, crowded into a pack. One of the girls points. The teachers burst into a flurry of Russian, and I move to the edge of the crowd. What's going on? I say, all out of breath and too quiet for anyone to really hear me. The bodies block my vision. My heart races and my hands begin to shake as people turn to stare at me. Mr. K motions for a Dobrava to come. They shout at each other in Russian. He hollers for everyone to get back. Bet watches my face. The boys grip the curtains they've just pulled aside, seemingly frozen in place. People shuffle away from me and whisper. I can't see anything over the crowd, all the bodies blocking me, fluttering around like butterflies. All I hear is my heartbeat. I push through the bodies. Mr. K peers at the glass, shaking his head. I hear him say,
"Who did this?"
He turns to glare at us all. He repeats his question three more times and lunges at us.
"I will not tolerate this type of behavior in my school. Not again. Ballet is supposed to be beautiful. You're making it ugly."
I want to ask what happened, but I swallow hard. I feel shaky. Mr. K stalks through our now silent group. My head feels light from my racing heart and all the voices and the confusion. I get a clear look at the mirror. A message is scrawled across it in pink lipstick. The Sugar Plum Fairy, has farthest to fall.
Chapter 8. Bet. Friday night rehearsal ends early after the message is discovered. I'm on a high with a rare chunk of free time, so I'm going to use it wisely. I took a pill after seeing the way Alec rushed to Gigi's side after the message was revealed, and another after hearing snippets of Gigi's conversation with Mr. K about the bullying incident and her delicate feelings. Eleanor is in the cafe, so I use our private bathroom to smooth a deep red 1940s Dior shade on my lips. But that won't save me from the teacher's suspicions about who did it. There will be the ones who recognize my loopy handwriting, or the Chanel lipstick that is my signature color, and my sister's signature, and originally my mother's signature. A saturated pink that was way too obvious and will probably get me into serious trouble. But I couldn't resist putting the message up there. It was sloppy. I didn't even want her to see it yet. Will did that on purpose. He knows me too well. I used to be much more discreet, undetectable. I remember the secret pranks Liz, Eleanor, and I played on Cassie last year. Putting purple hair dye in her conditioner so her blonde curls got all stained. Shredding up her leotards and tights just to see her get in trouble with the Russians for not having the right thing to wear for class. Slashing all her shoes or soaking them in vinegar. Trashing her room. But nothing compared to the look on Gigi's face today. She's such an easy mark. And the message was so much more clever. And the thrill of it made me feel powerful. But I can't make the same mistakes I made last year. I check my cell phone for a message from Alec. Nothing but 3 missed calls from my mother and no plans to call her back. I am certain Gigi's mother bakes cookies and sends care packages and tells her she's perfect as she is. Gigi has the glow of someone who has lucked out. She'll probably get a special delivery after she tells them about the message and her hurt little feelings. Leaning hard on the edges of the bathroom sink, I imagine Alec's hands around Gigi's waist, lifting her in a tutu and spinning her around during their paw. I imagine her liking the feel of his touch. I imagine him kissing her. I imagine him liking how different she is, her curly black hair and light brown skin and cute freckles and California mellowness. 2 pills aren't enough to erase those images and feelings. I swallow the 3rd one dry and can taste the bitterness as it goes down. I'll have to get more soon if I keep up this pace. The same energy that had me raring to go now gives me a new, singular focus. Find Alec. The hum of the Adderall in my bones and buzzing in my head obliterates any sort of potential pity party. My entire body and mind want only Alec now. After the pills, there's only ever room for 1 desire at a time. My phone buzzes, and I bristle, thinking it's my mother harassing me still, but it's Liz. She's at the coffee shop on 65th Street, and, she reports, so are Alec and Will. It's not an invitation exactly, but rather a warning. I don't want Alec and Will alone together. I slip off my ballet slippers and step into flats, but don't bother actually getting dressed. Alec likes me in my leotard and dance skirt and leg warmers and slicked back hair. He likes to pull the blonde mass out of its perfect little bun and snap the leotard off my shoulders. I shiver at the thought. I should not have had that last pill. I'm practically rabid thinking about him, and that's no way to get his attention. Alec likes me icy and unreachable. And Will hates when I get Alec's attention. The evening guard has his boot heels on the front desk, his hands folded over his belly, and is in a deep sleep. I sign myself out. I slip out of the building and use the short walk to get myself under control. It's chilly for late October. Usually, New York City holds on to the summer heat a little longer. I'm shivering when I get to the coffee shop, fingernails blue. Snow Queen it is. Alec at a table by the window, wrapped up in a striped scarf and a cashmere sweater.
Freshman and sophomore ballet girls watch him over calorie-filled cups. Even a study group of girls from the nearby Catholic school snatches glances at him. I hate being just one of the many girls drinking in Alex's good looks. But here I am, standing just inside the little coffee shop, and letting my gaze linger before I approach. I like seeing him when he can't see me. No games. No pressure to look pouty and together. Just the pleasure of seeing someone beautiful and sure. It doesn't last. From her corner, Liz smiles, flashing me a knowing look, as Alec waves me over. I'll owe her one. I don't go over to Liz's table, not wanting Alec to know she texted me, that I have eyes everywhere. Will is behind him, partially hidden by a wooden beam, too close to Alec. I grimace at how pathetic it makes Will look. I can never decide if I'm pissed at him or just feel bad for him. "Here to see me?" Alec says, lighting up. I love that I have that effect on him still. "Of course she is," Will says. His eyebrows reach toward each other. He used to be so fun. He used to be normal. He used to keep his feelings to himself. "Aren't you going to offer me a seat?" I say. I keep my lips pursed and let Alec look me over.
"I like you standing,"
Alec says, trying to be edgier because I told him I liked it. Another girl could get shy in a moment like this, but I've been ass naked in front of costume designers and teachers and classmates. I've had them pinch my sides and weigh me in public and measure every last inch of me to see how far away from perfection I am. So I'm not shy. I put a hand on one of my hips. I let him take me in. He's probably right. They're probably all looking at me. I'm a prima ballerina, no matter what Mr. K has to say about it. And the rest of them can see it all over me.
"You look great," Alec says at last,
which means I've won this round. Will sighs loudly. I sit down hard on the chair, drowning it out. Finally, I wrap one of my feet around Alec's ankle. He responds by pulling me into him and kissing me on the mouth, hard. He smells like coffee and hard work. He got his extra practice in. Smelling his sweat, I feel a pinch of guilt at being in here, snaking my foot up Alec's calf instead of throwing myself into practice, doing pirouette after pirouette, and using the early rehearsal in to keep working on my variation. I kiss him again to make me forget.
"Okay, enough, you two," Will says.
His voice is tense now, too, just like his face. He's saying the same words he always has, but they sound so, so different.
"Can't you give us some alone time?" I snap.
I can't take any of his little jabs tonight. I press myself even harder against Alec, shrinking that centimeter of space between our bodies. Will looks like he's about to say something else, but something in him must melt a little, because he nods and gathers up his stuff. The tiny surrender is enough to make me smile his way. But he misses the look, and he'd probably misinterpret it anyway. The secret smiles and eyebrow raises we used to share don't work anymore. He stopped being my surrogate little brother this summer, and now, I just don't know what we are.
"Alec, call me later,"
he says. He lands hard on Alec's name, and even pauses to accommodate the space where my name would have been. Just one more person who hates me. I know it won't help matters, but I lean my head on Alec's shoulder and put a territorial hand over his. Will leaves, taking long dancer strides across the coffee shop. I still like watching the way his limbs move, still admire his impenetrable grace. I'd love even half of his passion. I'd tell him so, if we were speaking in anything but clipped, one-syllable words.
"Get your own boyfriend,"
I call out when he is already half out the door. Will's shoulders slump, and everyone in the shop has heard me. He turns bright red, like his hair. He's not quite out beyond the conservatory walls. Boys from Kentucky aren't supposed to like other boys. His eyes look sad when they meet mine. I hadn't meant to hurt him. Not really.
Harsh, B, Alex says.
Can't you guys get over your little spat? He smirks and puts a huge hand on my thigh. The warmth of his hand travels through my thin tights. Not yet. His hand feels good on me, so I don't move it away.
So stay out of it,
I say back, so he knows I'm not some weak, delicate flower, scared to tell him what to do, like the other ballerinas who would love a chance to be with him. He loves me because I'm fiery, feisty, stronger than anyone else. Neither Will nor I have told Alec the details about our fight, because the fight is about Alec. Sometimes, the words tickle my lips, and I want to tell Alec the secret Will told me, but the bigness of it keeps me quiet.
You're all wound up today, and I'm guessing that's why you put that message up about Gigi,
Alec says. I put several inches of space between us, losing the warmth of his hand on my legs. I hate that he said her name, that he ever has to say it. Sounds too pretty coming from his mouth. I think about lying to him, saying I didn't write the message, but he keeps talking.
Look, just because Mr. Caden cast you as the Sugar Plum Fairy doesn't mean what you think it does. Don't be like those other girls who get all catty and start messing with each other. You're better than that.
I'm not better. I am that girl. I've just been good at hiding it from him.
The Snow Queen is an opportunity to show Mr. K.
I'm fine, I say, louder than I'd intended. Stop looking at me like everyone else is. You know I'm fine. I'm great. Can't I just come visit you? I hear the edge in my voice and try to soften it into something sexy, kissing his neck and letting the last few words land on the stubble just below his chin. We haven't been able to hang out much.
Always happy to see you,
Alex says, but it takes him a moment to reach for my body again. He sounds sad, disappointed in me. It's a familiar cadence to his voice these days. He grabs a menu from under his coffee mug. He starts making creases and folds in the paper.
You need your congratulatory flower then, if we're celebrating, he says.
He's been making me paper flowers since we were little kids. His Japanese nanny taught him origami, and it's a strange hobby that girls tease him about but clearly think is secretly sexy, which it is. I love watching his hands manipulate the paper. Every crease is careful, gentle, like him. He finishes, and it's a perfect rose, made even more beautiful by the menu's text on the petals.
For you, he says. And if you want to talk about it.
But his voice fades out, because we both know that's not going to happen.
Well, I'm sure you'll enjoy working with Henri, he finishes, the smirk firmly back on his face, like it never left. He's been asking about you. Tips for partnering you?
Henri and Alec are roommates.
Dancing with him might get you in one of those magazines.
For the first time ever, I hear a small pinch in his voice, and I know he doesn't like Henri. Maybe it will, I shrug, putting the paper flower behind my ear, where I secure it with a bobby pin. We've never danced with other people before. Alec and Bette are always paired. Our names have been listed beside each other so often that it's burned into my memory. I don't want his name next to Gigi's. I don't want to dance with Henri.
I guess at some point we'd have to get used to partnering with others. It'll be weird at first. Gigi's got a different...
I kiss him to erase her name. It feels good to let go and to have him here with me. Just us. For at least this moment, Giselle Stewart can't take anything else from me. I take Alec back to my room. Sneaking him in is as finely choreographed a dance as any we do on stage. We shuffle past the sleeping guard and into the elevator together. We push the fourth floor button first, to check that the RAs are still there. Their office spans the entire floor. They continue to answer the phones and dole out meds to several puffy-faced freshman girls who've no doubt cried themselves headaches. No one looks up at us as the doors ping open. Then, Alec goes to his floor on the 10th, because the RAs watch the elevator video feed. I go to mine on the 11th and let him onto the floor through the staircase exit. "Out," I say to Eleanor, but smile to soften it after I open my room door. She's stretched across the bed, I'm sure doing her visualizations, but if she were a real threat, she'd know she'd be better off actually still in the studio dancing instead of lying there thinking about dancing. One of Adele's performance videos, the ballet La Bayadere from 3 years ago, is on my flat screen. I click it off and don't comment. She's been watching old films of my sister a lot lately, and I wonder what's next. Will she show up at Adele's apartment like a fangirl? Will she ask my sister for technique tips? "We're roommates, Bet," she says, in a voice I've never heard come out of her before. "I'm not your little slave. And hi, Alec. Congratulations on your role." "I let you be my roommate," I say. I don't even have to lie. Eleanor couldn't afford this room, Adele's old room, the only one on the hall with a private bath. "Don't make me remind you, okay? That's embarrassing." "Bet," Alec says. He never used to scold me like that. He liked that I said what was on my mind. Plus, Will used to be my snarky sidekick, and the two of us would make Alec laugh with our snide little comments. Eleanor's face falls. I guess it was my intention, but I'm not some robot, and she's supposed to be my best friend. I take a deep breath. We've been getting into fights like this a lot lately, and I promised myself I would try harder to get back to the way we used to be. But some days, I can't even remember how it used to be, who I was, who she was, and what made us friends. Since I didn't get the Sugar Plum Fairy role, nothing feels right. And she's been watching these videos and disappearing for blocks of time and not telling me where she's going. She's keeping secrets from me. She's making things weird lately. "Alec's just gonna hang out for like an hour. Could you work in the lounge maybe? You're looking hot lately. We all know you'll be bringing a guy over sometime soon, right?" I even wink and pout. Her cell phone rings. She jumps to silence it, then caves. "Holding you to that," she says on her way out the door. "Cross my heart, hope to die," I say and grin. It does feel good, remembering that we actually kind of love each other. I miss her a little the second she's out the door. "Just an hour?" Alec says into my neck. "We can make it a good hour," I say. And we do. But the whole time feels like another big audition. And this time, the challenge is to be the sexiest, the most desirable, the wildest. I wrap my legs around him so tight, I'm surprised he can still breathe. I can be the girl he fell in love with years ago. The girl he still loves now. The only girl he wants to partner with. We don't have sex, though. Alec says he's tired and needs to conserve his energy for tomorrow's rehearsal. I'm naked by the time he throws that one out, and I can feel my face shift from sexy to pissed. "We always have rehearsal," I say. "I have a huge role and a pot of practice." "With Gigi," I grumble, then explode. "You shouldn't have come up here then. Where the hell is my shirt?" I scramble out of bed to find something, anything, to cover up what he's rejected. "I thought we still had fun," Alec purrs in my ear. He kisses the lobe and then down my neck. "Just seems weird that you don't want... I want you. I always want you. Just freaked out about impressing Mr. K tomorrow. I swear. This weekend I'll be back to my normal self, okay?" He's blushing, like we've both failed at our sexy, romantic relationship tonight. When he leaves, he kisses me on the head, and for just that one moment, when his lips hit the space where my hair meets my forehead, I've won. It isn't about Gigi. Tell Eleanor to come back in, okay? I can still make him do things for me. He nods.
Can't wait to tell her all about me?
He likes to tease me, and even reaches down to tickle me. I squirm and hold back laughs. I could do this forever with him. Eleanor and I don't sit around talking about our boyfriends all night. I tease back.
Don't get the wrong idea.
I let out a flirtatious laugh and touch his shoulder. He's surprisingly tense. He even blushes a little. Even if I love you, I tack on, like maybe that's what's bothering him. He doesn't say it back, just kisses my forehead again. I almost repeat, I love you, like maybe he just didn't hear, but I can't take the risk. It's a long, lonely 5 minutes before Eleanor reappears. I don't want us to have another awkward spat right now. I just want my old friend back. Eleanor throws the door open. Done? Her face is still rosy, like the first day I ever met her. 6-year-old would-be ballerinas auditioning for the conservatory, standing in tiny leotards, hands and feet ready to be examined. Can we watch Breakfast at Tiffany's? I say. My voice is quiet, and I just want her next to me, sharing a blanket, watching the TV like it's a portal to a world outside this stupid dorm. Eleanor sighs. I'm sure she thinks she's supposed to stay mad, but I know she just can't do it. Not strong enough. We lie on the futon couch thing we have set up and get to the part when Audrey tears up her apartment in grief. Eleanor's breathing has slowed. She always falls asleep first. Her head flops on my shoulder. I wish I could sleep as soundly as she does, but I know I won't be able to for a long time, until the spring ballet and my second chance to snag the lead. What do you think of Gigi? I whisper into the dark, knowing she won't hear except in her dreams. She says, which I decide means Gigi's no big deal, nothing special. She can't take everything from me, right? I say, and listen again for Eleanor's nondescript sigh. It comes, and I try to let it comfort me as much as it would if we could actually talk about this. A few tears come before I finally fall asleep. Quiet ones. Just between me and the dark.
Chapter 9. June. I walk to morning ballet class alone, super early, so I can have Studio C all to myself and get my head together before it starts. I've piled on the layers. It's late October and the chill has already started seeping into every pore. Plus, layers give me just enough invisible padding. I blend right in with the rest of them. But I know, really, that I need to make Morky see me. That's how you become a star. Catch your teacher's eye. Right outside the studio, I almost drop my thermos. Sajin's boyfriend, Jaehee, sits on a booth seat in front of the glass, where everyone gawks in at us. He's slouched in unlaced Converses and slim black pants. His red hoodie is up and he's looking at his phone. I haven't seen him since Sajin and I stopped being roommates and friends. Almost 2 years ago. When did he start wanting to watch her dance? He looks sort of the same, but cuter, less awkward. I've known him longer than Sajin. We went to the same Sunday school as kids. He lived 3 blocks from me. And before I moved to the conservatory, his Harmony used to watch us both after school. She'd call me her little granddaughter, and I would swim in his blow-up pool. I even know he has a blue-bottom birthmark on his butt. But now, Sajin and Jaehee are like a version of Bette and Alec. Made for each other. Perfect. Royalty in our Korean community. He leans forward and looks up at me. I feel my face get hot. I'm afraid my makeup will run, He doesn't say anything, just stares. Hi, I say, not sure why I'm even talking to him. In the 9th grade, I lost all my friends when Seijin turned on me. Everyone disappeared, even him, especially him. Hi, he mumbles back, rubbing his sleepy eyes. What are you doing here? I say, taking another sip of tea to fill in the space between his delayed responses. I wonder if he's skipping school. I wonder if he's changed. Seijin, he says. Supposed to watch now, I guess. I try to make more small talk and realize that this is the first time I've actually spoken to a boy from outside the conservatory in a long time. Are you going to finally join ballet class with us? Remember when you used to try to do pirouettes in your basement? I laugh, surprised at myself. For a second, I feel like I'm back in my old life. The one with friends and people who wanted to be around me. The one where I had inside jokes and memories and traditions. The one where I made room alongside ballet for hanging out, marathon chats, and adventures outside of school. He kind of smiles. His cheeks are fuller, and there's a touch of stubble that wasn't there before. It makes my breath catch, with regret, or maybe something else. A throat clears behind me. Jaehee squirms and looks away from me, like I'm not there anymore, like he wasn't talking to me at all. The tiny connection is lost. The feeling of my old life disappears in an instant, like a popped bubble. Not so pretty this morning, are we, June? Seijin says, pursing her perfect pink lips. She startles me. She sounds the way a snake might, if it could speak. The other girls twitter behind her, too scared to say anything themselves, but happy to look me over, laugh in my face, whisper in fast Korean, and point at my body like it's a dartboard for their own insecurities. The new Chinese girl is on the edge of the pack, arms crossed, lost in translation, but still finding a way to non-verbally participate. Oh, you don't look that bad, I say in response, proud for a half second that I came up with a comeback. Seijin steps closer. I can smell her breakfast and make out the scent of that same soft pink lipstick she's worn since middle school. Trying to be like Bet. When we first moved to the high school dorm floor, Seijin and I were inseparable. Chinjeol, best friends. She was the sister I never had. But at the start of the 10th grade, it all changed. That was when she started a rumor about me, forced the RAs to move me out of our shared room, and never spoke to me again. It was really early, on a morning like this one, a cold fall day, and we'd been sitting at the twin vanities her mom had bought for our room, just like the ones in the American Ballet Company dressing room. Seijin's mom was nice enough to get me one even though my mom couldn't afford it. The bulbs cast a warm glow on our faces. Seijin opened her makeup case. You should start wearing more makeup, she'd said, removing a blush, lipstick, and powder. Especially to ballet class. I'll just sweat it all off, I said. I was so clueless then. Real ballerinas dance with it on, without a drop of sweat on their faces. Leaning in close, she took my chin and pulled me into the light, like she was one of the makeup artists that made us up before our tiny girl parts in the company ballets. You ever notice that? I didn't answer. Close your eyes, she said. I obeyed. I always obeyed. She brushed the powder across my face, the strokes like butterfly wings fluttering against my skin. Then she used her soft fingertips to add blush to my cheeks and rubbed a waxy stick of lipstick on my mouth. These colors will hide your yellowy undertones. My mother always says you don't want your skin to be the color of a dead chicken wing. Her voice was full of wisdom. This type of palette is best for us. And I was in awe of the way she used words like undertones and palette words I'd never heard before. She wiped a smaller brush across my eyelids.
This will create a shadow, like you have a crease along your lid. It'll make your eyes appear less slanted. The Russians don't like our eyes.
She set the brush down. I don't care if they don't like it, I said, hating that so many Asian girls go through surgeries to change their eyelids' shapes. But Seijin wanted to be one of them.
Oh, yes you do. Everyone cares what they think, even though it's disgusting. Too hard not to care. You won't get the things you want if you don't, she said, rubbing her fingertip near the corners of my eyes.
Look, she instructed. I opened my eyes, unsure about what I was going to see. A different, softer girl gazed back at me. Seijin leaned her face close to mine, her eyes big and doe-like.
See? You look different, she said.
I felt different. Special. I felt like a soloist or principal in the company. Not like myself, who couldn't seem to do anything effortlessly. I tried to say thank you, but I couldn't find the words. She lifted my chin again.
You look very pretty, she said, her voice just a whisper.
She stared at me, and a weird energy stretched between us. She leaned in close. I saw the two tiny freckles on her nose and felt her breath on my face. I couldn't move. I couldn't pull back. Then she kissed me. Her pink lips pressed into mine. Soft, warm, and strange. I'd never been kissed before. Her eyes closed. I kept mine open, not sure what to do. I watched her eyebrows lift. She tried to part my lips with her tongue. I pulled away. What are you doing? I said. My heart lodged in my throat. The noise of it thumped in my ears. Her nose crinkled, and a deep blush climbed from her chest up her neck and to her face.
Sorry.
She turned her head to her mirror and took a lipstick from her bag. Her shaky hand applied more to her lips. I wiped the gooey paste from my mouth on a tissue, some of it mine and some of it hers. I watched sweat appear on the back of her neck. I wanted to say something, that it was okay, that she was my best friend, that I didn't know why she kissed me, but I would be here to help her figure it out. I looked at the clock. It was almost time for class. I got up to leave. Seijin didn't move or follow me. She sat, transfixed by her own image in the mirror. I didn't know what to say. I tried to wait for her to come. She didn't. I rushed to the door.
Ijeon?
She called out. I turned around. She just looked at me.
Tell them I'm sick, okay?
She said, her eyes brimming with tears.
Okay,
I said.
I'm not.
Her voice broke.
I was just.
Of course not, I said. Korean girls don't kiss other Korean girls. They kiss boys. They marry boys. I wanted to ask more. Wanted to know why she kissed me and what was really going on. To let her know that she'd be okay, no matter what. That I'd be there for her.
It's all right, all of it,
I started to say, but she put her hand up and I had to go. Before the end of that day, Seijin asked the RAs to move me out of our room, and a week later, a rumor surfaced. That I was a lesbian and she didn't want to live with me anymore. My mother was called, and the guidance counselor lectured me about making other students feel uncomfortable. Seijin's wearing that same shade of lipstick now, and I bet her mouth tastes like it did all those years ago. A mix of lipstick and grapefruit and tea. Probably a lot like mine does, actually.
You're always second favorite, aren't you?
Seijin says, taking a step closer to me. Seijin's sweet perfume wraps around me. She bats her big eyes.
Understudy for Gigi. No one's first choice. You think you're so great, but no one else does, huh?
Her eyes narrow. That hits. My momentary quick wit vanishes, and I fidget trying to squirm out from under her gaze. It only hurts when it's true, I guess. I feel the jewelry box shift in my duffel bag and hear the tinkle of its insides. I don't know if she's thinking of my father too, but I can't help myself. The only thing my mom ever said about him was that he started a new family, one he prefers more than us. What Sajin says is true in more ways than one. Of all the things she's called me, a bitch, a poser, a wannabe white girl, this is the worst. Understudy. I remember my mom's words on the phone, and her threat. If I can't do better, I'm getting pulled out.
Nobody wants you, Sajin says.
I want to say that she wanted me. I want to bring up the kiss, which I never have, not in all these years. But I don't. I've kept her little secret. Jaehee says something to her in Korean. She stops. You already won, I say at last. Sajin doesn't know what to do with that. I want Jaehee to see her as the bad one. The other girls throw a few Korean insults my way, and even though I can translate some of it and know how rude they're being, they can't come close to hurting me the way Sajin just did. Sajin hushes them, waving her hand in their direction the way I've seen Bet do to Eleanor and Liz. She really is trying to model herself after Queen Bet, and she's pulling it off. The girls quiet instantly. I turn to retreat into the studio.
I found this,
Sajin says, and reaches into her own bag. Something glints in her hand, and I know immediately what it is. My missing compact. She knows how important it is to me. It's always in my bag or on my desk. I imagine her rifling through my room. I grab for it, like a child, and I'm surprised when she lets me have it. Her mouth twitches, holding back a smile. I open the compact, but inside, the mirror is broken, and the glass has cut the perfect little powder cake. It's destroyed.
Oops,
Sajin says. The hall is now full of dancers, and they all must be watching, because the space is silent, and I feel the heat of a dozen pairs of eyes on my face. Jaehee says something else. Sajin and he spar back and forth. I wonder if it's about me. I click the compact closed, wondering if I can glue the tiny mirror back together again. Morky sweeps everyone into the studio for class. We warm up, complete our bar exercises, then Morky makes us do futé turns in the center. I go to the front of the class, squeezing between some of the other girls. I spread out my arms to get them to move. Some grumble. Others mutter under their breath. I don't care. I want her to see me turn. The music starts. The other girls around me finish their four turns, just what Morky asked for. But I can't stop. I spin and spin and spin, stamping out the conversation I had with Sajin. I do one revolution for every insult and mean word. I feel eyes on me for the first time. Morky walks in front of me. The other girls move away from me. I know they want me to stop. I know they're thinking that I should have just done the four turns Morky asked for. I am alone in the center, a spinning top. I've lost count of how many I've done. I finally come down off my leg.
Bravo,
Morky says. She calls me dedicated in front of everyone. She says my futés are perfect. Usually I'm a ghost to her and all the teachers, not worth noticing. But not today. I took the risk. I pushed myself to show off a little. Everyone claps for me, except for Sajin. Some rub my back and give me compliments that don't feel fake or ridiculously transparent. Gigi squeezes me so tight I feel like I can't breathe. She grins like she's proud she gets to live with me. I fight the warm feelings it gives me. I even see Mr. Lucas, Alex's dad, watching from behind the glass wall, which he almost never does. He gives me a strange little smile and nod. When I curtsy and return to the bar, I catch Jaehee's eyes on me through the glass. He's standing instead of sitting now. I hold his stare for what feels like an eternity, then turn my back, trying to fight off a smirk, the weight of his gaze heavy on my slim shoulders. Not so invisible anymore. I know what I'm going to do to Seijin.